o'clock. You're listening to 90.1 KPFT. Please stay tuned for Arab Voices.
مرحب شهر الصوم مرحب لياليك عادت في امان بعد انتظارنا وشوقنا اليك جيت يا رمضان مرحب شهر الصوم مرحب لياليك عادت في امان بعد انتظارنا وشوقنا اليك جيت يا رمضان مرحب بقدومك
يا رمضان
ونعيش ونصومك
يا رمضان
مرحب بقدومك
يا رمضان
ونعيش ونصومك
يا رمضان
بعد انتظارنا وشوقنا إليك جيت يا رمضان زيك مفيش بين الأيام كلك حسنة
كلك حسنة
بيزيد معك نور الإسلام فضل وبركة
فضل وبركة
لياليك محلاها
يا رمضان
ويا محلى بهاها
يا رمضان
لياليك محلاها
يا رمضان
ويا محلى بهاها
يا رمضان
بعد انتظارنا وشوقنا إليك جيت يا رمضان العباد فيك فرحانة من صلاة والصيام
من صلاة والصيام
حتى العيون فيك سهرانة مش راضياتنا
مش راضياتنا
ليل ويا نهار
يا رمضان
وكبر وصغار
يا رمضان
ليل ويا نهار
يا رمضان
وكبر وصغار
يا رمضان
وبعد انتظارنا وشوقنا إليك جيت يا رمضان محلاهم فيك بعد ما نفطر شمع منور
شمع منور
مسكين فوانيس ده فانوس احمر وفانوس اخضر
وفانوس اخضر
يرقصوا ويغنوا
يا رمضان
فرحهم وتهنوا
يا رمضان
يرقصوا ويغنوا
يا رمضان
فرحهم وتهنوا
يا
بعد انتظارنا وشوقنا إليك جيت يا رمضان
Good evening and welcome to the Arab Voices on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 FM in Galveston and kpft.org on the World Wide Web. This is Saeed, producer and host of Arab Voices. My co-host Mark is not feeling well, so he would not be with us this evening. The Muslim community in America and around the world began the month-long fast of Ramadan, which is the month of the Islamic lunar calendar, during which Muslims abstain from food, drink, and other sensual pleasures from break of dawn to sunset to complete one of the five pillars of Islam and to achieve greater self-discipline, self-purification, and compassion for those less fortunate. It is the most blessed month of the year for Muslims. It is a time for reflection, prayer, and renewal of faith. By the way, Muslims are a growing segment of the American society. According to some estimates, it is the fastest growing religion in the world, with about 7 million Muslims in America and 1.2 billion in the world. Arab Voices wishes you a happy and blessed Ramadan. Ramadan Mubarak wa kull aam wa antum bi khair. Our guest tonight will be Dr. Laurie King Irani, co-founder of Electronic Intifada, coordinator of the International Campaign for Justice for the Victims of Sabra and Shatila, and former editor of Middle East Report. We will discuss with her the dire situation in the occupied Palestinian territories. We will also take your calls live, so please make a note of the phone number. It is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. But first, let's update you on our local community calendar. The Arab American Cultural and Community Center and the Houston chapter of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee are organizing an event in remembrance of Dr. Edward Said, one of the most influential intellects and activists of the 20th century, who passed away on September 25th. Guest speakers include Dr. Osama Maqdisi, Associate Professor of History at Rice University, who also serves on the Arab American Education Foundation at Rice, and Dr. Hossam Abulaila, Assistant Professor of Comparative Literature at the University of Houston. This Edward Said Remembrance will be held this coming Sunday, November 2nd at 2:30 p.m. at the ACC Ballroom located at 10555 Stancliffe Road. For more information, call the ACC at 832-351-3366. The ACC is also offering a variety of free health screening to the Houston community at large. The ACC Medical Clinic is open on Sundays from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Different doctors with different expertise are providing this free service. To make an appointment or for more information, call 832-351-3366. The Muslim Public Affairs Council will present Ramadan, a Season for Caring, at the Children's Museum of Houston. The interactive spotlight performance is designed to teach what Ramadan is all about as the museum begins its annual Festivals of Light with Ramadan Wonder Weekend. This event will be held on Saturday, November 8th at 2 p.m. at the Children's Museum of Houston, Brown Auditorium, located at 1500 Benz in the Museum District. For more information, call 713-797-6722 or visit www.mpac.org. The Arab American Anti-Discrimination Committee issued a reminder to all foreign national men who are currently in the United States and submitted to the special call-in registration, reminding them that the one-year re-registration requirement is still in effect. Men who registered with the U.S. immigration authorities during the special call-in registration program initiated last year must return to their local immigration office to comply with the one-year re-registration requirement. For more information on this, please visit www.adc.org. And now, with the news summary. Two Palestinians were killed today by the Israeli occupation forces, including a 13-year-old Palestinian boy who was shot by the Israeli occupation army in the Balata refugee camp near Nablus in the West Bank. A third Palestinian died today of wounds he received 2 weeks ago when he was shot by the Israeli occupation army. Several Palestinians were murdered over the past week and dozens were wounded by Israeli gunfire, including a 17-year-old boy who was shot today with Israeli live bullet in his feet. In the city of Nablus, dozens of Palestinian school children of the Fatimiya Elementary School were wounded as they inhaled tear gas fired at their school by the Israeli occupation army. Several young schoolgirls were vacated to local hospitals in Nablus as scores were aided on the spot by paramedics. In the Gaza Strip city of Khan Yunis, Israeli occupation army incurred yesterday into the Ad-Delta and Al-Sitar Al-Gharbi neighborhoods and razed vast areas of Palestinian-owned lands. Two Israeli colonists were also wounded today in the West Bank as they were attacked by Palestinian gunmen. The Israeli occupation army invaded the town of Al-Zahra, south of Gaza City, on Saturday night, the eve of the month of Ramadan, the holiest month in the Muslim calendar, where people prepare for fasting for the entire month, and blew up three large apartment buildings as well as the town's police station. Eyewitnesses told reporters that the Israeli occupation army began issuing orders to the town's residents through loudspeakers to come out of their homes and move on foot to the nearby Nusayrat refugee camp, which is 2 miles away. Nearly 5,000 Palestinian citizens, not allowed to remove anything from their homes, wandered on foot overnight in complete disorientation, not knowing where to go. After expelling the 5,000 Palestinians from their homes, Israeli tanks shelled the local police station, severely damaging it. Then Israeli occupation army wrecked the remains of the station, along with three large apartment buildings in the town, with explosives and remotely detonated them, leaving 2,000 Palestinians homeless. Each of the three apartment buildings was about 12 floors high and had 144 apartments in them. The blast rocked the entire area and caused wide structural and material damage in the nearby homes. Israel has been consistently leveling homes to the ground in a move widely condemned by human rights groups and the international community as a violation of the Fourth Geneva Convention and international law. Article 53 of the 1949 Fourth Geneva Convention forbids any destruction by the occupation power of real or personal property belonging individually or collectively to private persons. According to the United Nations, close to 12,000 Palestinians have been made homeless by these demolitions in the Gaza Strip alone since the outbreak of the current uprising 3 years ago. Months after Tom Harndal, a British peace activist, was shot by the Israeli occupation army in Rafah, the Israeli military attorney general has finally agreed to open an investigation in the attack. Tom Harndal, 22 years old, from the British city of Manchester, was shot in the head by the Israeli occupation army and is currently laying in deep coma, or clinically speaking, in a state of clinical death. Tom went to the Gaza Strip with a group of international solidarity movement activists aiming to help the Palestinians and face the occupation forces using non-violent methods. While peacefully demonstrating near an Israeli checkpoint, the Israeli occupation army opened heavy fire at the crowd, which made Harndal hold a Palestinian child to his body to protect him from the gunfire. An Israeli sniper bullet penetrated Tom's head, leaving him in a state of coma. Tom Harndal is one of many peace activists from the US, Britain, France, and other countries who were shot by the Israeli occupation army. And in March of this year, the Israeli occupation army murdered Rachel Corey, a 23-year-old American citizen who was in Rafah City in the Gaza Strip while she was trying to protect a Palestinian house from being demolished. On Saturday, two peace activists with the Grassroots International Protection for the Palestinians, GIPP, were wounded with heavy machine gun fire by the Israeli occupation soldiers in Balata refugee camp near Nablus in the West Bank. The two activists, Mark Torman, 24-year-old American, was shot with a live bullet in the left foot, while Josh Tolf, 24-year-old Australian, was wounded with shrapnel in his thigh. The Palestinian prisoner Affairs Ministry condemned on Monday the continued imprisonment of a Palestinian child in the Israeli jails as the Israeli occupation forces started detaining Palestinian resistance activists' wives to use them as hostages. In a written press statement, the ministry expressed deep concerns over the life of 12-year-old Rakan Nusayrat from Jericho Governorate, who has been imprisoned in Ofer detention camp under harsh detention conditions. The statement said, quote, under extreme psychological pressure and threats by the Israeli jail administration, Nusayrat attempted suicide for the third time by drinking several medicines and chlorine. He was transferred to Hadassah Hospital in Jerusalem a few days ago. Nusayrat is the youngest Palestinian prisoner in Israeli jails, and we consider his detention a grave violation to the Child's Right Declaration and all international humanitarian laws. Unquote. The ministry called all international and human rights organizations around the world to intervene and exert pressure on the Israeli government to release the child and cease all the violations to international humanitarian laws being committed every day in its jails and detention camps. Meanwhile, the Israeli occupying forces started adopting a new pursuit to apprehend Palestinian resistance activists, and that is kidnapping their wives and using them as hostages. One of the victims of such pursuit was Tamam Abdel Wahid, 23 years old, from the village of Kafr Qalil, north of Ramallah City, who was arrested only because she was the wife of a Palestinian resistance activist. Israel continues to humiliate Palestinian civilians to an unprecedented level. Just a few days ago, and at the beginning of the holy month of Ramadan, the Israeli occupation authorities detained around 600 Palestinian passengers at the Rafah border crossing between the Egyptian and Palestinian borders. An Egyptian official at the crossing said that the confined Palestinian passengers, mostly women and children, were obliged to spend all the night in the open air, cut out in such isolated border terminal. They eventually slept on the ground, waiting to be allowed to move by the Israeli occupation authorities. The Israeli newspaper Yedioth Ahronot reported today that senior Israeli military commanders were severely critical of the Israeli government policies towards the Palestinians, saying that Defense Minister Shaul Mofaz, acceding to strong Shin Bet opposition last week, rejecting a direct request by the Israeli Army Chief of Staff, Moshe Yaalon, to ease closures and blockades placed on Palestinian population centers. A United States senator said the Israeli policies in the Palestinian territories resembled the segregation and discrimination that was practiced against the African-American community in the United States back in the 50s, describing the destruction that she saw in the Gaza Strip, quote, like that of a hurricane. Senator Donzella James for the state of Georgia was among a delegation representing the Interreligious and International Federation for World Peace, who, despite the Israeli obstacles, managed to travel to the Gaza Strip and witness the enormous destruction there. Senator James told reporters that she was appalled and surprised with the amount of destruction because the foreign and U.S. media don't convey the whole and real picture of the situation in the Middle East, especially the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. She said, quote, I was really surprised when I came here because you don't really hear about everything. You would think that after one bombing, they would clean it up, start repairing, because you hear what some people want us to hear in the United States. It was almost as if a hurricane has come through to make the destruction that I saw. The senator expressed sorrow for what is happening to the Palestinian people at the hands of the Israeli occupation forces and added that she will work on direct and indirect levels in order to improve the situation of the Palestinians and bring peace and harmony to the region. Senator James added, it is obvious to me that I, who thought that I had inner roads to all the information, I would not know what was really happening here And for me, as a 10-year politician, not to know about that, I say it has something to do with, I just want to say that nobody is really reporting the real deal. She also said, I can equate racial discrimination and repression to what is happening here. The discrimination, the harassment, the robbing of your own land from you. And I know what we can achieve peace if we can all come together, work together, and make sure that in this land that God gave to all his children, we can live in peace and harmony together here. Concerning her reaction and plans to help, Senator James said that lobbying was the best way to move in the United States. Finally, violence is on the rise in Iraq with so many deaths and wounded on the Iraqi side and the occupation side. Just a few hours ago, two U.S. soldiers were killed and one was wounded when their tank was hit by an explosive device north of Baghdad. And a U.S. military post in the northern city of Kirkuk was hit by 5 Katyusha rockets. 7 Ukrainian soldiers were also injured today when they were attacked in southern Iraq. Yesterday, U.S. occupation forces shot and killed 7 Iraqis, while 9 others were reportedly killed in a car bombing in the town of Fallujah, 30 miles west of Baghdad. These attacks came hours after a series of bombings that rocked the Iraqi capital Baghdad, including a major attack on the Red Cross Center and several police stations, claiming the lives of 42 people and leaving more than 200 others wounded. We will take a break now, and when we come back, we will talk with Dr. Laurie King Irani, co-founder of Electronic Intifada, coordinator of the International Campaign for Justice for the Victims of Sabra and Shatila, and former editor of Middle East Report. We will also take your calls live, so please make a note of the phone number. It is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT.
Till the dark of night during Ramadan, Ramadan, his family celebrates Ramadan. I have a friend, her name is Amina. Her family celebrates Ramadan. We go to school together and play. Amina prays five times a day. During Ramadan, Ramadan, her family celebrates Ramadan. On the last day of the month of Ramadan, their families invite us to the feast that they put on. Celebrate Ramadan, Ramadan, their family celebrate Ramadan. Ramadan, Ramadan, my friends celebrate Ramadan. Ramadan Mubarak, Ramadan.
Welcome back to the Arab Voices on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 FM in Galveston, and kpft.org on the World Wide Web. This is Saeed, producer and host of Arab Voices. With us now live over the phone from Canada is Dr. Laurie King Irani. Dr. King Irani is an editor, anthropologist, and freelance writer. She is co-founder of Electronic Intifada and coordinator of the International Campaign for Justice for the Victims of Sabra and Shatila, whose legal team lodged a historic case in Belgium against Ariel Sharon and others responsible for the massacre. She edited Middle East Report magazine, published by Middle East Research and Information Project from 1998 to 2000. Dr. King Irani is a frequent commentator on national and international news programs, including MSNBC and CNN International, on political, cultural, and military developments in the Middle East and U.S. foreign policies in the region. She has written articles on Israeli war crimes and the Right of Return campaign that have been published in national magazines in the U.S. and the Middle East. Dr. Laurie King Irani has a PhD in sociocultural anthropology, specializing in the political identity and participation of Palestinian citizens of Israel. Dr. King Irani, welcome to the show.
Thank you, and glad to be here. I'd just like to say Ramadan Kareem to all of your listeners there in Texas.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate the time you're spending with us. Can you please give us your take on what's happening in the occupied Palestinian territories? It seems that what's happening in Iraq, although it's not an excuse for the media, but nobody is reporting the really catastrophe that is unveiling in the occupied territories. Just over the weekend, three apartment buildings, each one is 12 story high, were detonated and demolished by the Israeli occupation army, leveled to the ground. 2,000 people are made homeless, and that barely was noticed by the U.S. media or reported by the U.S. media.
Right. It's very frustrating, and it's one of the reasons that we created our website, Electronic Intifada, which originally was created to be a media monitoring and media critique website. But we found that no matter how much we critiqued the media, how much we monitored it, how many times we wrote to the mainstream key news agencies, like, you know, the big affiliates, CBS, NBC, the big magazines and newspapers, to tell them just what you have said, that horrible things are happening, that violate international law, that are very dangerous for people there on the local as well as the regional and international level. And we saw that nobody really changed their reporting or tried to enhance their reporting or expand their reporting. So what we eventually did was just make our website be the media that we wanted to see. Rather than critiquing the mainstream media, we decided to be our own kind of an outlet and newspaper. But it's just really is frustrating to see that even though there is quite a lot more awareness, I'd say, at the grassroots level in the United States and Canada, largely through the alternative media, and even though there is so much going on, there's lots of websites, lots of books, lots of magazines, documentaries, much more in the last few years than I ever saw before in such a short period of time, that's getting the message out that something really illegal, immoral, and rather dangerous and destructive is happening in the occupied territories on a daily, if not hourly, basis. And then you just see so little of it reflected in the mainstream media here in America. It's important to note, though, that Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, both have come out with some pretty stern statements about Israel's behavior in the last week regarding those events that you detailed. And at the same time, within Israel itself, the press there has had quite a few articles and editorials over the last week that are extremely critical of Ariel Sharon's government, that are very scathingly critical of the events that have taken place recently, especially in Gaza. One editorial in what's usually a pretty middle-of-the-road paper there, Yediot Aharonot, which is not considered to be very much to the left, or usually that focused on human rights for Palestinians' rights. The editorial even said, is it possible that someone in our government has defined all of Palestinians as the enemy? If so, we have entered a very dangerous period and there are no more limits. So I think that there is more awareness everywhere, but the problem then becomes, how do you get to the centers of power in Israel, in the United States? How do you reach those people and convince them in a rational, legal manner that what is happening is very destructive, wrong, and really it's all violations of international law? And that's, you know, pretty much the tack that I always try to take, is to remind people that there's something called the Geneva Conventions, and Israel is in serious, grave violation of every clause of the Fourth Geneva Convention, which is supposed to govern what Israel does as an occupying power there. And I think we have to put a lot of pressure at the level of the United Nations, at the level of the international community, to have a big conference, hearing about what's going on and how very, very profoundly out of line with international law Israel is. And eventually this is going to harm not just Palestinians who are taking it on the chin immediately, but it harms Israel too in the long run as well, if nothing else but, you know, enlightened self-interest, they ought to stop what they're doing.
Yes, and I mentioned in the news summary earlier in the program about Article 53 of the 1949 Fourth Geneva Convention, mm-hmm. which basically forbids any destruction by the occupying power of real or personal property belonging individually or collectively to private persons. And we know that Israel has been demolishing Palestinian houses not since the beginning of the current uprising against their occupation, against the occupation of the Palestinian land, but really going back to the 1967 or even back to 1948.
Oh, yeah,
and let's
before.
Not forget 418 villages that were completely wiped out of
right.
the face of this planet by the Israeli occupation forces in 1948. And in the last 3 years alone, and according to the United Nations agency, at least 12,000 Palestinians have been made homeless just in the Gaza Strip alone, mm-hmm. which is, by the way, the most populated area in the entire world.
Right.
But
it's population density, I mean.
Yes.
Yeah, as far as like the space concerned and how many people are there, it's very crowded.
Now, unfortunately, the United States government here, which is the main ally and financer, really, of what Israel is doing on the ground in the occupied territories, because we here, the taxpayers in America, we send over $3.5 billion every year to Israel, is not voicing any concerns about the massive destruction and the confiscation of land and the apartheid wall that Israel is building. Although they go on radio and TV every once in a while and they say, well, we don't recommend that Israel does this, we don't recommend that Israel do that, but talk is cheap. What's happening on the ground is a whole different story. Why is the U.S. so blindly one-sided against the Palestinian and just completely pro-Israeli?
Well, that would take about an hour probably to go through. It's a very complex issue, and I don't think it's as simple as many people like to believe. You know, the kind of really abrupt black and white sorts of things people say that, oh, Jewish Americans are powerful, they control the media, they use their money, and that's the story in a nutshell. I don't think that it's that simple. I think it's a lot more complicated by far, and I think you even have to look at some cultural ideologies of the United States and of the founding kinds of myths of this country to understand why the U.S. does what it does there. And that kind of takes us outside the whole realm of, you know, Israeli-Palestinian conflict or anything else. And I think for the United States, they look at, and especially now, particularly now with the administration of George Bush in office, and I'd say that you have, if not more, well, certainly more public support and involvement in the organs of government during this administration than probably ever before from people who we would characterize as Christian fundamentalists or evangelicals. We've got a particular vision of not just America and not just Israel, but all of the cosmos. And in that vision, they see the establishment of Israel as part of biblical prophecy. They see that this is, you know, a stage towards the end times. And when I first heard about all of this, I have to say, frankly, I was pretty amazed and thought this was just absolutely crazy and who could possibly believe in this sort of thing. And then as I looked more into it, I thought, well, it's really a serious problem because there are a lot of people who believe in these types of very un-Christian views. And they have a lot more power in this administration than they've ever had before at all levels. And I think they also probably put more influence on what goes into the media than has ever been the case before. So I think that what needs to be done is that people within the mainstream Christian community in America have to be more aware of what these ideologies are, the dispensationalist evangelical form of Christianity. which I think probably even George Bush himself subscribes to, and to be more public about what that entails as far as the moral, legal, historical, and political repercussions of following that kind of theology. And certainly the United States was founded as a country where you're supposed to have a clear separation between church and state, and the fact that people who hold these bizarre views are influencing foreign policy ought to be brought out, investigated, critiqued very publicly and thoroughly, because they shouldn't have that sort of power over policy formation or deciding how to, you know, cast the whole view of what's happening in the Middle East in statements that come out of the State Department or the White House. And Bush himself, I think, has probably gotten on board with some of the more cynical and Machiavellian people in the pro-Israeli Likud community in the United States, who have done a very masterful job of equating September 11th with such groups as Hamas and Islamic Jihad in Palestine, and equating the kinds of resistance that takes place in the occupied territory with the events that took place in Manhattan and Washington, D.C., and that field in western Pennsylvania on September 11th. And that's really very politically problematic as well as intellectually dishonest, but with an American public that was probably quite frightened and alarmed by the events of that day, I think a lot of people have not done much critical thinking, and they might have just gone along with assuming that what is being said by the Israelis and what's being echoed by those people in the mainstream media must really be true, and that, yes, Bush is fighting terror, the Israelis are fighting terror, that's a good thing to do, so we should all be doing that. And, well, if they, you know, make 2,000 people homeless, it's tough, it's hard, but you have to do what you have to do to fight these people who took down the World Trade Center towers. You hear that kind of discourse, and people have to be better educated. And probably people in your listening audience should make the effort to go out and meet with people that they might not usually sit around and talk to. Make the effort to meet people at local churches. Make the effort to meet people at the Rotary Club and try to get a different perspective out there. And I think it has to be done in a very diplomatic and sensitive way as well. I mean, you just can't barge into a place and say you're wrong and I'm right and this is what's really going on. And if you come in at people yelling and screaming and being really strident, they just won't listen to you. But if you come to them with a sense of respect and humility and say, look, you know, maybe we should look at it this way. How about if we consider the picture from this angle? And what about this historical precedent? And what would you do if you were in a situation where somebody took all your rights away? Then I think people start to see it through a different lens, and they maybe start to think about it in a new way. And I think that's where you have to start. You have to really start with personal connections, because people will not be led to look at a website just for the heck of it. I mean, you can send them links to a million websites, but they might just, you know, hit delete and get rid of all of them and not learn anything. But that personal connection and the kind of changes that come into people's minds and actions based on actually knowing somebody and gradually starting to see things from a different angle, I think that that's ultimately much more powerful. It takes a lot more time. It takes effort. But I think that it lasts longer in terms of real transformations on the ground.
And I just wanted to again re-quote a United States senator who went to the occupied Gaza Strip for the first time recently, last week. That Senator Donzella James of the state of Georgia, mm-hmm. who really described what she saw in the Gaza Strip as a, she said, quote, like that of a hurricane, describing the destruction that she saw. She said she was really surprised when she got there, but by what she saw, and completely different from what she used to hear here in the media and what the media wanted everybody really to know in the United States. She even described the Israeli policies in the Palestinian territories as that they are resembling the segregation and discrimination that was practiced against the African-American community in the U.S. back in the 50s.
Yeah, even worse, I think it's much closer to apartheid in South Africa.
Yes. We're getting a lot of phone calls, so I want to give an opportunity for our listeners to ask you questions live and to remind our listeners of the phone number. It is 713-526-5738. Again, it's 713-526-KPFT, and we are talking with Dr. Laurie King Irani, the co-founder of Electronic Intifada and coordinator of the International Campaign for Justice for the Victims of Sabra and Shatila. She's also the editor of Middle East Report magazine. Yes. 713-526-5738 is the number. Let's go ahead and take our first caller, and that is Eric. Eric, you're on there.
Good evening, Saeb.
Good evening.
Thank you so much for your show, first of all, and for KPFT for giving us the freedom to hear a completely different perspective from what we normally hear.
Thank you.
On the media. I listen frequently to Arab Voices because I travel extensively in the Middle East. I work for a major oil company, and I have always enjoyed my travels in the Middle East. I think the Arab people are incredibly intelligent, witty, family-oriented, loving people, and we don't see that enough in our media, in the reporting of the Arab people. Also, I want to say thank you to Dr. King Irani for the great work that she's done and for being on the show tonight. My perspective is, and I've got so much emotion about this, that we have made a terrible mistake, that our country has gone into something that's even worse than Vietnam in some ways. And we don't understand what we've gotten into. We've been misled by our administration and by the media. We have been told fabrications and lies about what the real threat is to us. There is no threat from the Arab world. The threat is that we are blind. I think Dr. Irani said we are blind to some of the things that we are funding around the world, the oppression that we're funding. And our country is basically a good country, and I love it, and I love the people here. But we have to open our eyes, and we're not going to be able to do it with the media that we have in this country. There are only 5 Pacifica radio stations in the country, I believe, and that's not enough. So we've got to understand that we are funding a kind of apartheid in Israel. And I have been to Israel. I've been to the Holy City. I've seen the way the country is divided and the way the people are divided, and we are funding that. And you mentioned, I believe, Saeb, that we are giving them $3.5 billion. I think it's more than that.
I think it's more like $11 billion, actually, if you add
I think it is, and I think it's we give $11 billion or $10 billion to Egypt, and we have done that ever since the 67 war. They are the 2 largest recipients of our foreign aid, just to keep the peace. And you know, there was a great report that came out this week about the attack of the Israelis against the Liberty right before the war broke out in 67. And I encourage everybody that listens around the country to KPFT to dig into that, look into that story, because it's very enlightening.
Yeah, we've actually put something up about that on Electronic Intifada this week with links to other reports.
Yes. Well,
and Eric, if you have a question, because I got to take.
I don't. I just wanted to tell you thank you for giving us a different story and a different perspective, and thank you both for the work you're doing. And
thank you, Eric. And I would suggest and recommend too, since you actually do travel to the region and you've been there many times, that, you know, you might find it useful and very educational for people in your community to go to your local church or to a school or to a Rotary Club meeting and just say, hey, I've got slides, I've got information. You know, we're always looking about the Middle East on TV now. It's a big issue. I've got some, you know, viewpoints, some information that maybe you haven't gotten. You want to have me over and I'll talk about it, show slides. We can have a discussion. We can have a conversation. Because I think it's only out of those personal conversations that things are really going to change. You could also, you know, help people to know more about alternative media, like the Pacifica stations or like different websites, including ours.
You're right. And I try to do that. I try to be vocal. And we have to, as Americans, take responsibility for our foreign policy. And we have to understand that the administration that we have is digging a hole for us that we may not be able to get out of, and we have an election coming up, and let's not lose the opportunity to change this administration.
Okay, thank you, Eric, so much for your call.
Yeah. What do they say? Regime change begins at home.
Yes, definitely, we have to be active. Let's take another caller, and that is David. David, you're on there.
Hi, how are you doing?
Okay.
Well, I also used to live in the region. I'm an American Jew who used to live in Israel for a few years. I'm a very left-wing Jew. And my take on this is that I think this is a question of really bad leaders against the majority of the people who are good.
Yeah, I think we see that everywhere, Israel, Palestine, and the United States right now.
Yeah, definitely. There are, I don't... Unfortunately, I see that this is often cast in terms of the Arab world against most of the Jews, or the Arab world plus a few of the Jews against the rest of the Jews.
Right.
And I think it's really important to point out, especially since I think what is needed for peace is an understanding between the majority of the Palestinians and the majority of Zionist Israelis, because that's where the chances are to have an understanding among the people. And from my view, I think that often it's not really the things that you say, but maybe the way that they are presented.
Right.
And often it looks as though that the Palestinian view is that here are all the Arabs acting great and their leaders are great and, you know, totally innocent, and here all the Jews got together with the with the Western Christian world and pushed them away. And it's really most of the people who were involved in this were sort of reacting to their own personal situation. People were trying to just get anywhere out of Egypt, out of Europe, sorry. And Arab leaders were bad. They're just as bad as our leaders. You got to talk a lot about, for example, they brought up the Sabra and Shatila massacres at the beginning of the program. And I would love to see Ariel Sharon on trial at The Hague. But at the same time, a lot of very good people, educated people, are talking about this and not mentioning at all the people who pulled the triggers, who were Arabs. And
we had a big website about that, and that was clearly one thing that I was always keen to emphasize, was that, you know, the attempt to try Sharon and others in Belgium was not just attempting to try Israelis. There were many Lebanese mentioned as well in the list of the accused, but of those mentioned, two ended up being assassinated by parties unknown. So that kind of, you know, limited who we could try, since they disappeared from the face of the earth. But, yeah, I agree with you that there certainly is a lot of room for definite improvements among the Arab leadership.
There is a real chance to win over the majority of Zionist Jews and the majority of Israelis. And I think that most, unless somebody is really just idealistically Jewish nationalist or extremely religious on either side, reason works, because most people are reasonable. But it's got to sort of, the defenses have to be dealt with. I mean, I think I'm even open to the idea of a one-state solution.
I think that's the way to go. I think that's the only just solution
for everybody.
The problem
that I have
analysis. And I think it will happen. I think that just
I think it'll happen ultimately too. If
economically,
survives.
Demographically, water but issues will point it towards that direction.
Okay, David,
when I hear people, look, can I just two more seconds?
Just
when I hear that's presented from the Arab side, it's presented as kind of like a pan-Arab solution. And I, as a pro-Zionist, my concern is that the pro-Islam elements would take over, and I would like to talk about the one state issue, but from the perspective that how do we make it a real democracy where Jews would be able to go or Arabs would be able to go, but it would not be a religious state. I don't want it to be an Islamic state any more than it should continue to be a Jewish religious state, and it kind of is quasi that at the moment.
Okay, David.
And I don't think it's ever presented in this way.
Okay, David, I want to give an opportunity for so many other callers on hold. Thank you for your call.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Appreciate it. Interesting view that is shared by some out there, the one-state solution. It has obviously been reported, not widely, but it has been talked about by some Palestinians, some Israelis. But of course, we know that will never happen. Israel won't agree to that. And not to mention that, because by default, if that's the case, then the majority would be the Palestinians, and Israel will not allow that because Israel does not allow non-Jews to be really part of its system.
I think if there was a one state, it would have to be no longer based on the Zionist principles of it being
of course
a Jewish state. It would have to be some kind of a, binational democracy. And I just hear a lot more people, surprising the kinds of places I'm hearing this from, people who 10 years ago never would have thought about that for a minute are now talking about it in much more serious ways. So I take that as a bit of a hopeful indicator.
And I just want to mention one thing that is extremely important and crucial to this is that the Palestinians are really the people who should decide for themselves the status of their own land, the status of their own future, since they are living on their own land, but they live under foreign military illegal occupation.
That ought to end. A nice refreshing change if they could finally weigh in on their own lives.
Yes, and I want to just tell our callers who are on hold, I have five of them right now, please go directly to your questions because we have only about 7 minutes left in the show. So, and make your questions short. Next one is Mike. Mike, you're on there.
Yes, good evening and happy Ramadan.
Happy Ramadan. Thank you.
Thank you for taking my call. Two points I'd like to make, Doctor. You talk about the media. I have digital cable and I get a chance to watch the CBC National.
Yeah.
And it seems like that I'm basically watching the U.S. networks of the 1960s and 70s. The journalism is so much better.
Uh-huh.
It's so much more in depth.
Isn't that something?
It's more like a Pacifica.
I know, it's amazing. I'm an American citizen, but I've been living here in Canada for a little over 2 years.
Oh, really? So,
and it was, for me, it was a big eye-opener to see what they have on CBC. For instance, you turn on the morning news show, which is like Good Morning America, and instead of getting 15 minutes on Botox or breast enlargements, you get 15 minutes live interview in the studio with Noam Chomsky.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. I was just picking my jaw up off of the floor. But I see it. I teach in the university here, and I see my students are much better informed about the world. They have much more intelligent, well-thought-out viewpoints about things. And I think a lot of it is due to the fact that their media is probably 100 times better on all fronts than the American mainstream media is.
Oh, yeah, and I'm convinced that the powers that be want to keep us in this, what I call, perplexity state of fear to keep us from thinking.
Without a doubt.
And I think that's part of the problem. So psychology, they're trying to scare people. They don't scare me because I can see through their shenanigans and their facade.
Yeah.
But one of the solutions I think would be in this country is what they did in Eastern Europe. Part of the reason that the Eastern Bloc collapsed, you had the people say enough is enough. They went to the state media TV stations and occupied them. Did you know that?
That would be fun.
And I think that's what it's going to have to take in this country to get the media straight. Because if you get enough people doing stuff.
I think that's interesting. But then you see the other things, like in February of last year when 8 million people came out onto the streets all around the world to protest the coming war in Iraq, and the media couldn't very well ignore it. They had to deal with it. So I think that, you know, it's good to think about trying to affect the media, but more and more from all my work in media activism, I think more and more what you have to really do is take things to the streets in the old-fashioned, positive, constructive, political network-building way and get people involved, get them talking, get them publicly organized, get them literally out on the streets to say, hey, this is wrong. We don't want this. We need to have a different way. We need to have a different leader, a different policy.
Sure. And my last question is, how many more troops in Iraq do you think are going to die before we pull out of the quagmire?
Thank you for your call, Mike.
Oh, that's the big question of the day. Today they finally surpassed the number killed during so-called combat. And I think that they really have made a royal mess of things. What they've done with Iraq is just a huge train wreck of a problem that will not be solved anytime soon, and it's profoundly dangerous to everybody concerned. But they can't really just leave, because if they leave right now, it will just really be a disaster. What they need to do, seriously, is to internationalize and multilateralize the situation and give up this crazy, arrogant idea that they have to control everything. And also, I think that we as Americans have to be very clear that a lot of people in the Bush administration are benefiting economically from the post-war situation. And all the, you know, Cheneys and Halliburtons and Bechtel, that whole crowd, have basically finagled the United States into doing this war so they can line their own pockets. It's profoundly dangerous, it's profoundly corrupt, it's profoundly immoral, and I'd say it's profoundly un-American. So I hope that people really read up on that whole situation, talk about it, get out there in the streets, and vote these guys out of office in 2004.
Okay, we have about 2 minutes left. So let's try to take a quick, short question from Tabitha. Tabitha, you're on there.
Hi, I wanted to make a comment and a short question. My comment is about Palestinian Christians. Just that they really seem to be ignored a lot, and yet they suffered just as much as the you know, any Palestinian Muslim. I even heard about churches that have been invaded and occupied by soldiers and that have been bombed and shelled. My question is going to be seem strange, but I'm really curious here. I wanted to know some of the differences between Palestinian culture and between African culture, and probably 2 minutes is not going to be enough. I just need some key ideas and a place, preferably on the internet, where I might be able to look something up on this.
About cultures?
Yes, for example, in their food and their clothing, languages, etc., differences between Africa and Palestine. I know it's a weird question, but it's really relevant to issues that are going on in Houston today.
Well, Africa is a huge continent with all kinds of different cultures, mm-hmm. and as an anthropologist, I tell you, you have to start with like the material bases of life, because social organization and cultural values come out of how people, you know, make their living, how they subsist in different places.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout Africa, you've got, you know, people who are hunter-gatherers, people who were traditionally nomadic, people who farmed, people who had, you know, city-states, so it's hard to say that there's, like, one African culture. I think that would be a mistake, and for the same reason I'd say it would be a mistake to think that there's one Middle Eastern culture, but mm-hmm. to paint with a really broad brush, mm-hmm. I guess, you know, to say what would be similar to mm-hmm. African and Middle Eastern cultural life ways would be, you know, big emphasis on family and hospitality. And I think also, from what I've seen in the African-American community and from what I know working in Palestinian communities as a field researcher, that a big emphasis in everyday life, whether it's said so publicly or not, is the whole issue of dignity, being treated with dignity and, you know, overcoming a legacy of being treated badly, both, you know, African-Americans and the whole slavery issue, and that's a huge crime against humanity that's never been fully addressed in this country at all and should be brought out publicly. Like, there should be, just like there's, you know, now a Holocaust memorial on the mall in Washington, there should be a huge thing there for African Americans and Native Americans as well. But for Arab Americans, for Arabs in the Middle East, the whole issue of dignity and respect and being treated respectfully and humanity, respecting other people's humanity, I think, is really crucial to the basic cultural values. But, you know, to try to, you know, sum up African and Arab culture in 1 minute would be pretty hard. Yes. And as an anthropologist, I wouldn't recommend it. You could look at different websites. The website of the American Anthropological Association might take you to some interesting places.